Well, the urn has been returned and the Aussies were made to earn it. You can insert all of those urn jokes and make sure you leave a bit of room in the trophy cabinet back down under, because the Aussies have reclaimed the Ashes. And while the series technically could finish on level terms, we do know that the urn will be returned to Australia. That's what we're here to talk about. My name is Phil Pryor and we have a couple of huge cricketing brains in the building to do so alongside myself. First of all, foxsports.com.au cricket lead journo Jacob Karoop. Welcome back.
Hey, good. Hey, Phil. Good to see you.
And also a big welcome back to Brendan Julian, who gifts us with his presence as well. Thanks for joining us, BJ.
Oh, pleasure, guys. It's been a while, but what a good time to come back in.
Yeah, that is for sure. Australia won the fourth test. They go up 2-1 in the series, and being the carryover champs, they'll maintain the Ashes, and in what fashion they did so as well, of course, at Old Trafford.
Good way to do it, wasn't it? Look, it's been, I think, a really surprising series so far. I actually don't think there's too much between these two teams. I think the two big factors that have changed it for my mind have been, one, Jimmy Anderson missing out on the series, basically, and then Stephen Smith for Australia. I mean, I think you take those two guys out of it and it's pretty even. I mean, I reckon looking over it, you know, Australia have done a fantastic job. I mean, I always thought it was always going to be about the bowlers, and both teams are knocking each other over. It's just the batting side of things. And, you know, when you're making runs and giving your bowlers a chance, you know, you're in a pretty good position. And really for Australia, you don't often get, I reckon, two chances to win an Ashes series, this test and the last test for Australia. So they had two cracks at England, just awful. Their batting's been awful and their bowling is just hasn't lacked the depth, really. Take out Broad and the other bowlers really have just started playing test cricket. So that's a tough one for them, but who cares?
And the ability to bounce back from, you know, the heartbreak at Headingley as well. This is probably a good one to ask you on BJ.
Yep.
You know, just the cricketers being able to reset their minds and come out fresh and forget what happened in Headingley.
Well, I suppose from Tim Payne's point of view, he would have been happy that they got themselves in that situation, but and it takes a miracle to win a test match, and I suppose you can look at it and go, well, you know what, he just batted really, really well. Yes, we had our chances, and you know, Mr. Rannert, and then there's all those type of things that go into it. But I think all in all, Australia played pretty well in that test match, but just couldn't quite finish it and get it done. And as I say, you know, take out the Ben Stokes, all of a sudden, you know, you're going to walk over England. So it's been good for the series, though, hasn't it? I mean, that test match sort of really kept it alive, you know, winning at Old Trafford. And I think even the Oval have a lot of interest as well.
Yeah, it was funny. Old Trafford started to feel a little bit like it was going to go the Headingley way. Not so much of an England win, but, you know, the longer that 10th-wicket stand went, the more nervous you started to get. You could feel it a little bit from the Australians. But I think it was great to see Tim Payne, you know, really bounce back from what happened at Headingley. He copped a lot of stick after, you know, the review and whatnot and some of the field settings and everything that went on at Headingley. But, you know, that bowling change of minus Lavis Gagné, I mean, I put my hand up when it happened. I was like, what are you doing, Tim? And then what are you doing, Tim? It worked perfectly.
Well, I mean, don't forget, a lot of the senior players would have thrown that up. I mean, that would have been a last roll of the dice. And, you know, you often do that. You know, you often think, you know what, I've tried everything. I think you had 30 bowling changes and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And all of a sudden you go, okay, let's roll with this. So that doesn't surprise me. I mean, look, I don't always think it's always on Tim Payne's head either. You know, the Headingley loss and all that sort of stuff. The review system, to me, is just, you know, different, because if the umpires are umpiring well enough, there wouldn't be so much focus on the reviews. The umpiring in the series has been awful. I said it in the first test, they shouldn't have used the same umpires for the rest of the series. They were just so badly out of form. And what happens is that creates the tension of reviews for the captains, because they can't trust the umpire. If you have a good umpire and he makes the decision, you normally go, you know what, that's a pretty good decision. He's a good umpire. He wouldn't get that wrong, so let's not review. But when you've got an umpire that's just so badly out of form, you're going 50-50, what do we do, pressure, and bang, you're making a lot of reviews and you're going to get them wrong.
Yeah, I think you saw that with the Australians and England as well, to an extent, being much more restrained with their reviews this test of Erasmus and Damascena coming in and doing, you know, a much better job.
Correct. Yeah.
There was one bad call against a Mitchell Starc LBW, but that was really the only one I could remember.
And that's the way it should be. You know, I think players are more confident if they're better umpires. No doubt about that. And that, you could see that at Old Trafford.
We could continue to talk about the umpiring, but I want to talk about Steve Smith. Because seriously, I mean, he looks like – I was saying this to Jacob earlier, BJ. He looks like the older brother in a game of backyard cricket where he just forces his younger siblings to just keep bowling at him all day where they can't get him out.
And even when he does get out, obviously it's a no ball because he's the older brother, so he can call that.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of similarities, isn't there? I mean, look – taking nothing away from Stephen Smith, I just reckon England just bowled badly to him. I mean, you know, they didn't bowl enough air in the right area. I think it was day two, Archer bowled the first over to Stephen Smith, and Stephen Smith was, I don't know, what was it, 60-odd, not out. He beat him twice in the first over. Smith then was out of sort of reaching out for one, hit through the covers of four, and then he bowled a leg stump, he hit one through the leg stump, and then he caught and bowled and missed him. And he dropped it. So that's all happened in the first over. And then all of a sudden their plans, they just could not bowl enough in the right area. They just have not. And what they worry about England is they're going, oh, how do we get him out? How do we get him out? No, they overcomplicate it. I mean, you just bowl. You've got to keep bowling enough in the right area. And if he moves around the crease and he's squirting it through the offside, then he's in good nick. But he was in the 90s. They went around the wicket, two back on the hook, and he just... Bowling short to him around the wicket is just ridiculous. Even he said it. I just love that. Why, if you're in the 90s, guys bowling around the wicket short on a pitch that's not really getting up, I mean, it's just easy to play.
Like, it worked at Lords because that pitch was...
different.
It was different. It was two-paced and the bounce was uneven. I think Pat Cummins showed England exactly the way to bowl to Steve Smith and how he got Joe Root out. Top of off stump, it works.
That's right. And you've got to be patient there. And that's the thing with England. They're not patient enough there. You know, Jimmy Anderson is a massive loss to them. I didn't realise how big of impact it is. I mean, this is a guy that's probably going to retire soon. And England are just going to be nowhere. If that's the bowlers they've got, they're in big trouble, I reckon.
I think you saw that as well with Joe Root going to Craig Overton and Jack Leach straight after lunch on day four. Because, you know, Stuart Broad and Jofra Archer done such a good job building the pressure.
Correct.
On day four. They had Australia four for not many. And then his change-up bowlers are... Craig Overton, who just didn't really look up to it this test. Whereas if you've got James Anderson in that team, then you've got Jofra Archer coming in as the first bench bowler.
As an impact bowler too.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's what you want. You want Archer and you want Ben Stokes as probably impact bowlers. But they are struggling at the moment, England, with their bowling line. And you know what they miss? They miss a spinner.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they just do not have a spinner that can tide out an end and get wickets if it's turning as well. I mean, I thought the left arm spinner bowled quite well. It turned for him, but, you know, by that stage the game was nearly gone.
Who wins this series, do you reckon, if Steve Smith wasn't involved?
Oh,
well, I reckon it's 50-50. I reckon you take Stephen Smith out of the series and it gets down to probably 1 hour of play.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a session of play where suddenly you're taking three or you get a run out. That's what it would be on a knife's edge nearly every game.
I mean, the first test is England wins if Steve Smith isn't there. I think that's guaranteed.
Yeah.
This test is probably also up for grabs as well, considering, I mean, Steve Smith scored close to 300 runs for the test.
I mean, they were kind of in all sorts in both innings, you know, when Steve Smith comes to the crease, particularly in that second innings when they were trying to build a, you know, a match-winning lead.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's right. And his confidence is up at the moment. And when your confidence is up and you're in pretty good form and you're backing yourself, I mean, he's going out there and flicking the ball to the leg side from off stump and doing all these things because he's obviously in very good confidence. But I think Australia would always have the edge because I reckon our bowlers are better than theirs at the moment. But the batting is the issue. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. I mean, Labuschagne coming in at three, he's floating at three. He's normally a six, but... Tell you what, I mean, that's a guy that wasn't even in the team. Yeah. And then he's come in and he's done a great job. So, you know, he's made really, really valuable contributions.
There has been this, you know, this little side narrative in the last couple of days that the bowlers haven't, you know, been given enough credit for their effort. But, you know, considering what you're saying about, you know, just how important Steve Smith has been in this series win, perhaps it is... balanced, you know. Obviously, the Aussie quicks did do their jobs though as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, batsmen have got to set the game up, and normally your bowlers come in and win the game. But you're right. I mean,
you know, Pat Cummins has got 24 wickets at, I think, about 17 odd. I mean, he'll take
crazy.
That. And yeah. I mean, Josh Hazlewood's not far behind, having played three tests, and he's averaging.
Yeah, he's 18 wickets at 16.
Yeah.
Well, nearly 17. So Hazlewood and Cummins, you know, have done a great job. And I think Pattinson, is, like I said before, has only played two test matches, but I think he's bowled well. And don't forget Nathan Lyon, 16 wickets for him at 36. So they've all done a pretty good job, but they've got a lot of experience, though. I mean, yeah. You have a look at the test matches they've played compared to England, take out Broad. Tell you what, it's, you know, you've got to have a lot of experience to win and play well in an Ashes series.
The credit probably goes further too, BJ, because there was a really clear plan coming into the series, which wasn't, you know, based around fear and intimidation and macho man. It was, let's just continue to nibble at the top of off and you know, allow the English batsmen to make mistakes. But then also the selection, the selectors that made some really brave calls to leave Hazlewood out of the first test, to leave Stark out for as long as they did,
yep.
And to rotate the way that they did.
Yeah, look, I think you're right. I mean, I think also Australia coming into this Ashes series weren't the favourites. I don't reckon
yeah.
they were anyway. So they sort of snuck under the radar there, and there's a lot of focus on England and, you know, and not so much about probably Australia. But I think you're right, they've made some good calls. I don't like the term rotation. I don't think you need to say that. I think Justin Langer just says, you know what, this is the team we've picked, we think was going to win this test match. And we think Stark, you know, coming, I didn't think he'd play Old
yeah.
Trafford. I just thought it was probably too much on him to come in for one test match and go, right, I've got to get 5 wickets, I've got to win the test match and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, he bowled pretty well. I don't know.
Obviously, the fact that fifth test starts in
yeah.
a couple of days' time
that's right.
would impact that.
And he might not play Oval, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm talking about really, if they think that the surface, and it's very hard when you're in Australia looking at the pitch, they make the call in the morning, really. You know, they'll have Pattinson and Stark and go, right, what's our best lineup to win this test match on the bowling side of things? But that to me is not a problem. I think the issue is the batting. That's what we've got to try and sort out, because Labuschagne Scutney is not going to come back and bat 3 in Australia. I mean, what are they going to do with Khawaja? I think he's probably nearly done. I just think they might want to move forward, and they'll probably keep, obviously, I think Warner will play, but they've got to try and sort out that top 6.
We're speaking a little bit about the planning that Australia's brought into this series. For me, it kind of harkens back to 2004 when Australia finally won in India, and they kind of shelved their own game plan and played to the conditions and, you know, really thought about a series well in advance and worked out just what they had to do and just how to play in those conditions. And both times it's worked out wonderfully. I think that kind of every series that Australia's done well in away from home this century, that's how they've done it. They've gone, we can't play the Australian brash way. We can't try and blast the team out. Let's look at the conditions. Let's look at how the other team plays and let's work out the best way to go forward.
Kind of like what India did last summer down here,
exactly.
The way that they set themselves up for that series.
Exactly. And winning away from home is the hardest thing in Test cricket right now.
Yep.
And it
I
is
agree.
That is what you need to do to be a great Test team for me now. And I just really hope Australia continues doing this wherever it goes and it respects the conditions and it plays the conditions
well,
as it has.
Yeah, and I think they've probably got no choice, because if you have a look at the lineup, really, I mean, you've got Pat Cummins and also, you know, Stephen Smith. I'm talking about senior players, and then you've got probably Nathan Lyon in there as well, and Warner's sort of out of form, so you're not sure. So it's not a team that's big, bold, brash and arrogant, that you can just go out there and blast teams away, because that team doesn't, you look at that team sheet, I mean, there's a lot of inexperience there, and there's a lot of guys in that side, probably 50%, are thinking one series at a time, because I might not be in the side. You know, that's one of the issues. Mm. You know, there's top 6 changes all the time. The rotating bowlers. One minute Stark is the number one bowler for Australia and all of a sudden Pat Cummins, and then Stark's not even playing. You know, so I don't think they can afford to be like that anyway. So therefore the planning starts to take over, and that's probably, you know, back of house, Justin Langer controlling most of it, because Tim Payne's just happy to, you know, he's got to concentrate in his game. So they just go, look, this is our game plan at the moment, so we just got to stick to it.
What else should we pull out from the fourth test, Jacob, that that you'd like to mention?
You know, I think it was a great example of, you know, not always getting the rewards for how well you bowl and then getting the rewards later on. Like, Pat Cummins in the first innings probably bowls the best 10-over spell of the test, and he doesn't get a wicket for it. And then Josh Hazlewood comes in, goes bang, bang, bang.
And then, that's bowling in partnerships. Yeah. That happens all the time, doesn't it?
Okay. And then Pat Cummins, you know, he gets the new ball to start the next innings, and straight away he gets his rewards. And he got his rewards the next day as well. But I think that's the great thing about the Australian attack at the moment, and it has been all series, is that they hunt in that pack. It's probably also, again, the difference between them and England. There's no let up of pressure with this Australian attack.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you have a look at our bowling lineup compared to theirs in terms of experience, test matches. You know, Nathan Lyon, 350 test wickets. You know, he's probably equivalent to Broad on the flip other side. But outside that, he's got backup of Cummins, Hazlewood, and Starkey. He's an impact bowler. He bowls 16 overs in that second inning. So they're in a good spot with the bowling side of things. Like I said, I'm never worried about the bowling. It's our batting that we've got to try and sort out. And I think we're no closer at this stage even to working out our top six still.
So one more test before the summer. I think it's Pakistan at the Gabba in mid to late November where it all gets going in a two-test series. Are we thinking about that in our selection here for this fifth test at the Oval in any way? You know, do we want to have another look at Usman Khawaja? You know, some things like that. You know, what is the selection mindset now?
It's a real pickle. You know, if David Warner was anyone else, he would not be even considered for the fifth test. His numbers have been awful.
Yes.
But he's David Warner. Yep. Like, before this series, he only had two fewer test centuries than Steve Smith. He's an all-time great when it comes to Australian cricket. But right now, like, he couldn't score a run to save his life.
No, that's right. And look, you're right. And look, he deserves to play the fifth test anyway. I don't think you need to worry about his selection at this stage. Look, I, you know, depending on David Warner, I think he'll be getting to the stage about thinking about just playing T20 cricket, one day cricket. I reckon he could seriously look at that. And
do you think that's his best path, or do you think that's what he might be considering?
Well, it'd be in the back of his mind. I don't think he's the player what he was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He had a really good World Cup, no doubt about it. But one day cricket's a bit different than Test cricket. I think also on the flip side of that, the Duke balls did a bit early on. So I just think it might be in the back. If he comes back to Australia and doesn't have a great start, you know, I think he'll be thinking about that. I think he's close to that. I mean, what is he, 30?
34, I
think. So at 34, you're really thinking, right, I want to play another five more years, not of test cricket, but of cricket and world cricket and whatever. So I think that'll be in the back of his mind. And it wouldn't be a bad option for him to bow out early.
And
go out, you know, like that. I think he'd obviously want to have a great series, but I reckon it's in the back of his mind.
He'll probably come back to Australia and score runs for fun, but then we're still asking, well, do we take him on our next tour?
That's what I mean. I mean, Justin Langer will be thinking, look, I need to sort this top order out, really.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to find an opener and we've got to find a number three. And I think probably the Khawaja one is, to me, more of an issue. David Warner's got the credit. I mean, Khawaja, to me, you know, I don't think he comes into the side as an experienced player, and I just don't think he's up to it. You know, he's patchy, and then he'll get runs at the end of a series like he did against Sri Lanka. He got the 100, which everyone was scoring runs, and then he's back into the side. I thought his World Cup was iffy, and then I reckon he was really lucky to probably play the first couple of test matches. I thought they were thinking, and that was probably because they weren't sure about Warner and Smith.
Yeah, Khawaja's an interesting one. I've got a lot of time for him just because of the way he plays. He's just such a good-looking player, right? But you can't really pick a guy on that. You've got to look at the way to run. You know, his form at home is always pretty stellar outside of last summer when Australia probably did really need him to stand up in the absence of Steve Smith and David Warner. I think for him it's going to be a case of, I reckon he'll play this test because they need somebody to open the batting with David Warner, and he's looked decent in every innings without really carrying on, which is a problem. But I think for Uzi, it's very much going to be about coming into the home summer and really putting the runs down at a domestic level, especially now that Marnus has looked good at first drop.
Well, he has. I mean, that's really surprising. surprised me. But I actually thought the Old Trafford test match, I thought Khawaja would open. I didn't think they'd pick Harris.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, that's one way of getting around it. You know, an experienced campaigner, you let him open the batting and run right through the whole series and then you reassess it in the summer. It's just, oh, I just think, would they bring him back for one test? But I'd rather see him opening. Mm. I just think maybe that's a better spot.
Maybe just have a look at him in that role. Yeah. I know Kerry O'Keefe, who was on the last podcast, he wanted to see Harris, and he thinks that Harris is the future, you know, of Australia in terms of an opener. So you know, I think that selection really it could have gone either way.
Well, you're right, and in hindsight, it's probably better that they're thinking forward, because like I said, there's two issues in the top six for me, and that's, you know, the Khawaja and Warner. Not that Warner's an issue yet, but those are the things they've got to start planning forward. And it's a, you know, and JL loves Bancroft. I mean, for him to get first run straight away in this series shows you that he's really keen on him. So he basically just wants someone to stand up. He's given chances out. He just wants someone to put their hand up and claim that spot in the top three.
I was about to mention, obviously, I think everyone agrees that Joe Burns was hard done by as well. Maybe he's the one that comes in. But, you know, when I was thinking and talking about bringing up the name Joe Burns, I'd forgotten about Cam Bancroft, and, you know, he played a couple of games in the series.
I know, and that's the thing. I mean, I was really surprised. I just thought Joe Burns would have played.
Yeah.
No, I could not get that. And then I thought, did he have a medical condition where he wasn't?
Well, he sat out.
Home, didn't he?
He went home for, what was it called? It was chronic fatigue syndrome. Because he went over to England for the county series, and then I think he played one match, and then he had to go home for you know, this syndrome. And I think that really weighed against him in the end, because he came back for the Australia A Tour. He got a century, and then he failed in that tour match. They said, mate, just go get some more cricket under your belt, which felt harsh.
Well, he got 100 in his last test, didn't he?
Yeah. I think especially when you look at the problem that Australia's left-handers in particular are having this series, which you probably could have seen coming, given, you know, the way Stuart Broad could move the ball from around the wicket.
Yeah.
Surely you would have opted for an extra right-hander in Joe Burns. But yeah, you know, Australia's 2-1 up, so it can't be too many regrets. But
yeah,
I guess that's Joe Burns probably has every right to feel stiffed and should be at the front of the selection queue come the summer.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they just go, we keep the same side. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's hard to bring in a batsman for one test, but, you know, who knows? They've made big calls early. I mean, Bancroft, they went early and went, no, mate, he's done. First two test matches, I think it was, and then they dropped him, so they're happy to make those calls.
It sounds like Labuschagne, at least for the time being, has cemented himself at three. Smith, Head, they're safe. Matty Wade, do you think we've got enough out of him this series, BJ?
He stepped up in the second innings this test.
Yeah. I think he will play the next test match. And then I think with Matty Wade, it's just going to be up to him.
Yep.
You know, he's going to have to, you know, punch out a score, you know, every, I don't know, five innings maybe. You know, if he has three bad test matches, I think they'll can him.
Mm.
And I think he knows that. He's at the stage of his career where I've just beat, you know, he's just got to keep scoring runs. You know, he's like Adam Voges and that type of ilk. You know, when you're at that age coming in and you're getting a lifeline, it's a short one.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it rolls. You know?
Especially as a specialist bat at number six as well now. Australia hasn't typically had too much patience for specialist bats at six in the last decade. So
yeah, I mean, I would have thought that would be Labuschagne's spot. You know, really.
Yeah.
In that number six, and I think, you know, that'll be something for Matty Wade to sort out. But, you know, he knows that, right? You score runs, you'll be fine. That's it, bottom line. I mean, that's the one good thing with the selection. They've gone, look, we're just picking a guy because he's made runs, and if he keeps making runs, he'll stay. You know, and that's all we can ask for. He won't, like I said, he won't have the long lifeline compared to younger players coming through.
Yeah, sure. All right. Well, we can. I know we've got months to work out exactly what to do with this summer test team. So we'll leave that there for a second, guys. Where does this series win stack up? I know Jacob, you mentioned India 04 a moment ago. Have you guys had a chance to reflect on that yet?
Well, I haven't really. I mean, I don't know. It's to me, it's a bit of a... It's
not a serious win yet.
Yeah.
It's important, I think.
Yeah. They haven't won in England since 2001.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big thing. I mean,
so they will really want a result.
Well, that's right. So will England, mate. I mean, England would be happy to draw the series. Yeah, yeah, okay. Australia still retain the Ashes, but for them to draw the series, I think they'd take it, wouldn't they?
I mean, I think, look at it this way. When India came here in 2003-04, and they drew that series to retain the Border Gavaskar Trophy, no one really talks about that.
No.
Because it's about, you know, you want to win the series. And for Australia, if Australia go on to win this series, it takes that 18-year monkey off their back. So next time they go over, it's about winning again rather than trying to win in England for the first time in what would be 22 years at that stage.
Mm. Yeah, I think it'll be a big thing if they win the series because they certainly weren't the favourites going in and they haven't dominated either. I mean, I look at the series and don't really feel that Australia's blown them away or they've dominated it. I think it's just got round to one guy standing up and having a absolute cracker of a series than Stephen Smith. I think that's the difference. You know, yeah. So I think a lot of people would be going, wow, that's a Stephen Smith series, really. That's done it. So, but like I said, if England go out and draw the series 2-2, then you go, oh, well, yeah, we retained the Ashes, but we didn't win the series. We drew it. I think the Aussies would be disappointed if they walk away 2-2.
I mean, it's still obviously, I mean, you saw the Australian celebrations at Old Trafford on the night, and it's still a massive deal that they've retained the Ashes.
Yes.
But it's really about getting the job done from here, for me.
Yeah, I think so. I think Justin Lang will be going, yeah, let's celebrate a win, but, you know, we want to win the series. That's what they've gone over to do.
It's pretty funny. We've all kind of, been guilty of going a bit early and labelling this a series win. But
I'm surprised. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, everyone's sort of going, what a great win, what a great win, and talking like it is a series win, but it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I don't think the Australians will be, going over the top. They'll be happy with their win, but at the end of the day, they'll want to win the next test, for sure, for sure.
The Oval.
Yeah.
What's the plan?
Well, normally, traditionally, the Oval does a bit with the quicks, but in the past it's turned a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think the big thing that's in the past that Steve Smith's averaged about 118 there as well.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Wow.
I don't think it'll matter too much what the Oval does if Steve Smith has his way with it.
It's a quick scoring ground. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think England can get caught up trying to worry about Stephen Smith, which, you know, at the end of the day, you got other guys you've got to get out. They've got to work out ways of combating our bowling, I reckon. That's their problem.
And what do you recommend?
Look, the way that, as we've talked about, the bowlers, they've hunted in a pack, they bowl top of off. I mean, that's England's approach. I mean, that's what they've got to do. But their batting side of things, it looks shaky. It really, really does.
There's just so many holes in that batting order.
I can't believe Burns has scored runs. I mean, I look at his technique and go, oh, man, he's going to get knocked over for fun, and he's squirted out runs, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it shows the value of application in an old school test mentality. I think guys like, Johnny Bairstow and Jos Buttler, Bairstow especially, like, it's not that long ago that he was churning out runs for fun in test cricket.
Absolutely.
And then, maybe it's coincidence, but he became a one-day opener and now he just can't do it anymore. Joe Root, he got a hell of a ball in the second inning. Yeah. Let's be honest. I think, any batsman, even on their best day, is probably going to struggle against that. But he's struggled under the captaincy with the bat, as many England captains have since they've taken on that role.
Jason Roy's gap was trending on social media, just about.
Every ball that Jason Roy gets out to looks like the ball of the century.
Yeah, but
but if you've got that big a gap between your bat and your cat, you're going to get bowled on.
I mean, his highest score is 31, Jason Roy. He's averaging just under 14. So you got him averaging that. You got Bairstow averaging 25. You know, those are your problems. You know, Denley's
Butler wouldn't be
25.
Too far behind either.
Their techniques are just not good.
Yeah,
basically, on pitches in England with the juke ball, you'd expect them to be a lot tighter. I mean, growing up on the juke ball.
Yeah. So in summary, both batting lineups pretty average, good conditions for the bowlers. The bowlers bowled well, and Steve Smith was the difference.
I reckon.
Yeah.
You know, and if the Oval's got a bit of tinge of green in, which I think it will do, it could go either way. Like I said, I mean, if they knock Smith over, and then it's up to someone, one of the Australians, to put their hand up and probably, you know, get some runs, and that might be David Warner. He might come out and go, you know what, I'm just going to come down the wicket and just blast it and treat it like a one day.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just think the way he's batting at the moment, he's just fiddling outside off stump. He's sort of getting to a situation. He's getting knocked over early, you know, and Broad's going to go around the wicket and bowl straight. He's just got to work out a way and get through that. And I think if he gets going, he'd be hard to stop.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty pumped about the fifth test now. Thanks for helping me get there, BJ.
Pleasure.
I hope all the listeners agree.
I would be surprised if the Australians change their side. Probably maybe just one bowler, depending on who's pulled up stiff or sore or whatever. But I reckon Pat Cummins has played every test match, bowled a lot of overs. He's vice captain. He won't want to relinquish his spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think if he can get through this test match, he has a decent break.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Patterson will come back in for someone. That's why they've rested him this test.
Yeah.
They're being a bit more careful with him, which is fair enough given, you know, his history. He's only just come back into the side. I think there will be a change at the top of the order, but, you know.
Who do you reckon?
I reckon Khawaja will come in to open. I think his record at the top is just too tempting for selectors not to have a look at.
Yeah.
Again.
It's the lefties issue.
It's the lefty issue. So whether or not that actually fixes the problem is, I guess, remains to be seen.
Oh, either way, I think if Australia makes some changes, it's not going to be eye-catching. I just think it's like, well, if they make changes, it's because they probably had to. But basically, like I said before, the batting, you know, and we probably haven't done it for, you know, probably 2 years. No one's really locked down their spots.
Yeah.
I mean, Khawaja, you would expect in the time of his career to lock down that spot.
Yeah.
Boom. Nothing going there. But, you know, it gets back to the same adage. I think we were at this stage about 12 months ago where we could not work out what our top six is, and I still don't think we're there.
And there's been two locks in the Australian batting order since about 2015, you'd say, since the last Ashes over there, and then since then it's been...
Yeah, it's been Smith
rotation.
And Warner have always carried the batting.
Yeah.
Everyone's batted around them. And then it was evident, obviously, when they were out of the game. And like I said, Smith's been a difference in this one.
Well, if anyone thought that this fifth test was a dead rubber, recommend this podcast.
Well, it's a big test. I think the Aussies will want to win the series. I mean, they won't want to go down 2-2. They won't be happy with that.
Yeah. Thanks very much, boys. And thank you to all our listeners out there who have tuned in to the follow-on podcast right throughout the series. We'll be back after the fifth test just to go over it once again and look ahead to the summer ahead. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, all those places. And, of course, Jacob Karup leads all our content on the Fox Sports website, foxsports.com.au, for all the live coverage and the reaction. So make sure you are tuning in and enjoying all of that coverage as well. Until next time, that's a wrap on the follow-on.